Hey, this is Kyle Clark. You're listening to the podcast version of Next. Catch us live weeknights at 6 Mountain Time on 9 News and streaming live same time on 9 News Plus. Email me anytime at next@9news.com. Colorado pays its respects to the fourth firefighter to die battling wildfires this year.
We're out here today to honor the sacrifice that the firefighter gave his life fighting that fire out in western Colorado.
A nightclub being investigated as a public nuisance after a shooting last night killed one person, injured 8 others. This comes as Denver considers new rules to let bars and clubs stay open later with better security. And we track the massive network of flights moving detained immigrants around America.
People are being treated like Amazon packages, kind of just shuffled about.
That's tonight on Next. Custer County hoping to go home or being told evacuation orders must stay in place because of near-critical fire weather that's causing that fire to grow. The fire in Pueblo and Custer counties has gone through more than 157 square miles, making it the seventh largest fire in state history. There are more than 1,300 first responders working the fire on the ground, and they've contained more than 60% of the fire's perimeter. The crews there are battling increased fire activity today. It's driven by the hot, dry weather and some strong winds out of the east. Some people in Custer County were allowed to return home early this morning, but the area is now back under evacuation orders. Colorado's newest wildfire started last night. The Hartman Hill Fire is burning southwest of Kremling near the Grand Eagle County line. It's small so far. New mapping today puts the fire at about 26 acres. No containment yet. People in southwestern Grand County and Eagle County have been asked to remain ready to evacuate in case that fire gets out of control. Bring in meteorologist Chris Bianchi now. So the setback on the Aspen Acres fire today, Chris, but some good news on the fight against the Willow fire.
Exactly right. I should also mention the Hartman Hill fire. Probably some good news there as well. They did get some rain up that way, but notice Leadville, a tenth of an inch of rain out there. Might not sound like a lot, but that will help out with the Willow fire in particular. Unfortunately, the bad news, we were just talking about this a second ago, there's Pueblo, of course, just west of there is where the Aspen Acres fire continues to burn. Not a good news day for the Aspen Acres fire, but I do anticipate some improved conditions for firefighting for tomorrow as all this monsoon moisture is going to gradually slide east. There's some of that rain right now. A lot of areas like the Glenwood Canyon area, the Vail Valley getting their first meaningful rain in a couple of weeks, and Glenwood Springs right now getting a pretty good storm as well. Of course, the other story, Denver, 100 degrees today for the first time in over a year. I'm going to have more details on that forecast and how it might help out with those firefighting efforts in just a few minutes.
Thank you, Chris. The pilot who died fighting the Gold Mountain fire outside Ouray last week wasn't from this state. He wasn't even from this country. Yet he gave his life protecting our neighbors. Today, Coloradans lined I-70 to say thank you. Our Mark Salinger was there.
Life along I-70 moves fast.
Not weekend I-70 traffic.
Even on the worst days, the interstate rarely leaves time for a pause.
We hope they can reflect on what we're doing out there.
Yet today, a 200-mile stretch of pavement from Montrose to DIA,
you can grab it,
became the perfect venue to stop, if only for a couple of seconds.
I'm hoping that everybody sees this passing through here and recognizes there's a small group of people out there willing to risk their lives.
Josh Boyles didn't know Nicholas Dale, the helicopter pilot who died last week fighting a wildfire outside of Ouray.
Hey, is we good?
Yep, we're good.
So it is a small community. It's a tight-knit community that really works together and supports each other, and this is just one way we can show support for everybody out there doing the hard work.
So they should be up and coming over Floyd Hill now?
Einar Jensen with Evergreen Fire understands it too.
We are all the fire service, and not just the American fire service, we're the fire service.
We wouldn't miss this. It's unfortunate, but we've got to be there for our family.
It started at a funeral home on the western slope, a procession of two motorcycles and six trucks passing through small communities carrying the remains of a Canadian pilot who gave his life defending a community far from home.
It is emotional. It's not just about this firefighter. It's about all the firefighters, all the men and women out on the lines this summer.
If only for a couple of seconds, the flashing lights racing up I-70
attention
signaled it was time to stop
present
and say thank you.
Hopefully every overpass looks like this. Men and women in the fire service coming here to salute, pay tribute to their brother who died, unfortunately, on the fire this summer.
The FAA and NTSB are still investigating the cause of the crash. At this point, the only thing that the FAA has said is that the helicopter crashed into the Silverjack Reservoir under unknown circumstances and became inverted in the water. Nearly 1,000 firefighters continue to fight that fire, Kyle.
Mark, you've covered aerial firefighting in Colorado for years, right? And we know that it is high risk. It is also extremely high value.
Exactly. And the last firefighting plane that crashed was fighting a fire near Estes Park at night, trying to be the first fixed-wing aircraft to fight a fire in Colorado at night. That pilot also died. It's very dangerous, but in these circumstances, when there are so many large fires burning across the state, it's also so important.
Yeah, they simply can do work that firefighters on the ground cannot. Mark Salinger, thank you. We hear talk of mass deportations. We see the videos of people being grabbed off the streets, and then they largely disappear from view. A months-long nationwide investigation led by 9 News is now shedding light on what happens between the moment someone is detained and when they're removed from the country. Our Chris Vanderveen and Chris Hansen analyzed millions of flight records to better understand America's secret deportation network.
15 passengers with disabilities, you're welcome to pre-board.
Denver International is one of the country's busiest airports. Here, the shuffle flights blend in. Of the 80 million who will fly in and out this year, few will notice the scale of the operation.
We see people being sent here from all over the country.
Attorney Jess Doggart represents detainees, many of whom came to Colorado from other states.
I mean, I think at worst it's clandestine. I think it is a very complicated network and system that probably is very difficult to track and run because of the sheer number of people they have detained right now.
Difficult to track, but as our investigation found, not impossible. It started with data, a massive amount. In Denver alone, we downloaded and analyzed more than 1.5 million flights in and out dating back to the start of 2024. From there, we looked for patterns, recurring routes, connecting cities with major ICE detention centers, aircraft making the same trips week after week. Then came another clue, the flight numbers. ICE Air and its charter companies often use recurring identifiers, Tyson 53, LYM 500, for example. Individually, they prove nothing. Together, they formed that pattern. Using that methodology, we identified 91 planes operated by 8 different companies carrying out what we believe to be the bulk of ICE Air's domestic flight network.
We're following a flight that left Phoenix about 8:20 this morning that I believe is heading to Denver.
With that narrowed down list, investigative producer Chris Hansen spot-checked flights we believed were part of ICE Air operations.
Largely, I think people are unaware of how often these flights are actually occurring.
Patterns, numbers, clues.
They had flights coming into Denver on the 1st, the 8th, the 15th, the 22nd, the 29th, and now today the 5th.
It all added up to a system.
We're at DIA, the plane came, stopped here.
A system that allowed us to find flights like this one, VXP-52. The 737 operated by, at least at the time, Avelo Airlines.
They're being searched, and now they're going up and boarding the plane. Take off, probably heading west to California, based on what we've seen previously.
These spot checks took our team of reporters.
Looks like they should be getting here in about an hour.
To airports like the one in Minneapolis, Minnesota.
So that is Tyson 46.
With our data, we identified and recorded ICE Air operations at 18 airports in all.
Chris, we know so little about this, and that is seemingly by design. It wasn't easy for y'all to find this.
Yeah, ICE Air operations, and that's literally the name of it, uses a system that celebrities will use to sort of hide their planes. And ICE has been able to do that. They do that. There's a variety of reasons why they do that. They'll say it's for security, but it also allows them to really keep these planes off the grid. For many, many months ago, producer Chris Hansen sort of came up with a way, won't go into a lot of detail, it's very complicated, but what he did was find these planes, not just in Denver, but across the country to get a better idea of just how vast this network really is.
It's important work. It's really interesting, interesting work as well. Chris Vanderveen, thank you. All week, we're going to be airing more of Chris's extensive investigation into this multi-state network of deportation flights. But you can watch the full documentary, ICE Air, Inside America's Secret Deportation Network, starting tonight at 8 o'clock on the 9 News app. That app is free to download. You just scan that QR code on your screen. Your generosity never lets up. Your latest Word of Thanks microgiving campaign raised more than $40,000 for the Mok Kang Scholarship Fund, helping refugees in our community pursue careers in education, healthcare, and tech. You have raised more than $19 million since 2020, and there's a new place to go to nominate a nonprofit for our microgiving. Wordofthanks.org. You just go to wordofthanks.org. That's where you can see the impact of your 300 plus weeks of giving so far and suggest where we might direct that generosity. Next. New nightlife rules in Denver would allow some clubs to stay open well after last call, so long as they beef up security.
Changes make a lot of sense for downtown, and they don't make a lot of sense for our neighborhoods.
And a reminder for you, you can catch Next streaming each night, 6 p.m., wherever you watch. And Next is now a podcast, wherever you find those. Meteorologist Crispy Donkey is out in the 9 News backyard, rarely more crispy than today.
Yeah, it doesn't get crispier than wearing a suit in 97-degree temperatures, right? I guess I'm going to be sweating through this, but it certainly was hot today here in Denver. We topped out at 100 degrees in Denver for the first time in over a calendar year. Also for us here in Denver, our 10th consecutive day at or above 90, 18th of 19 days at or above 90. So it's not just heat, it's been this kind of prolonged hot, dry stretch, a lot of 95, 96, 97 degree days mixed in there. Of course, not just Denver, if you're watching from other parts of the I-25 corridor. A couple takeaways there. Greeley at the airport, 106. Saw an unofficial 108 on the southwest side of Greeley. Boulder, first 100-degree day of the year. Fort Collins, the airport, 102. So it was hot today. I know, real shocker. But this is going to change a little bit. That ridge of high pressure currently over Colorado will scoot ever so slightly to the east. That'll allow, finally, some of that monsoon moisture to return to the Front Range. But for now, it's mostly locked up here in the mountains, but some beneficial rain for a lot of the I-70 corridor right now. We're happy to see it. Glenwood Springs getting a needed storm right now as well. Those showers and storms dissipate tonight, but because that ridge of high pressure drifts to the east, we will see those storms move into Denver tomorrow. At least a 40% chance for storms, slightly higher as you head north of town. Longmont, Boulder, Fort Collins, Greeley, better chance for storms than Denver tomorrow. 7-day forecast in Denver and the metro area. Those storm odds increase as we head through the rest of the week. Thursday, best chance for storms. Highs drop into the upper 80s.
Today marks 14 years since a gunman opened fire in the movie theater in Aurora. 13 souls were lost that night, 12 people and an unborn child. 70 others were hurt. We remember their lives and all those who love them. Denver police are investigating whether a club in southeast Denver is a public nuisance after a shooting there left one person dead and 8 others injured last night. Second time somebody's died at that club this year. The shooting happened after midnight, the patio of Ultra Lounge near Hamden and Dayton. Denver police say the shooting stemmed from a conflict between two groups. They had an issue earlier in the day in Aurora, then met again at an after party at the club. Police say they believe at least two shooters were involved. No one's in custody. No guns have been recovered. This isn't the club's first violent issue. A man was beaten to death in the parking lot back in March. Denver police is now investigating whether or not the club should be declared a public nuisance. That could result in their license being suspended or revoked. Denver City Council is actually considering changes to how nightlife and entertainment venues operate in the city. The changes are meant to make it easier for police to deal with after-hours incidents. Under these new rules, some clubs would be allowed to stay open until 4 a.m., although last call for alcohol would still be at 2, as required by state law. Events that regularly host live entertainment would also be expected to make some security upgrades. Surveillance cameras, a written security plan, clear signage banning guns, and an agreement to disperse crowds within 25 feet of the entrance. Supporters say allowing for longer operating hours would allow people to trickle out gradually rather than having large crowds pour out into the streets at 2 a.m. But critics on council say the changes would be disruptive to quiet neighborhoods.
While these changes make a lot of sense for Lodo, they don't make sense for Cherry Creek East, where there is a place that has a cabaret license that has live music, hosts live music regularly, and could host live music regularly once a month all year long until 4 a.m. with people sleeping 20 yards away, less than 20 yards away, 12 feet away across an alley.
Some business owners are also critical of the new rules. They say they'll be forced to stay open till 4 a.m. to compete, and that the new security requirements would be too expensive. City Council was supposed to take the final vote tonight, but they just agreed to put it off until next month. Tonight, City Council is also considering whether to send a 20-year agreement with Xcel Energy to voters in November. The current franchise agreement with Xcel expires at the end of 2026. That allows Xcel to use the city right-of-way for utility infrastructure and outlines how Xcel maintains equipment like streetlights and traffic signals. The city estimates the agreement has saved billions of dollars in construction costs. And a 3% franchise fee on customers' bills adds $30 million a year to the city's budget. But some on council are skeptical, and they want more guarantees that Xcel is following through on promised projects. We are back with your feedback. Actually, it's feedback, because Svee brought it in. It's next. The most Colorado thing we saw today is a slow-moving cattle drive. A viewer named Bruce Skelton sent us video from Superior where human drivers got stuck waiting behind some cattle on a drive of their own. Bruce says they were hoofing it across the highway apparently to get a drink of water. That's a pretty Colorado scene. If you see something that looks like this state to you, send it to us next at 9news.com. Shirley writes, fabulous camera work on the firefighter tribute story. Who was the photojournalist? I appreciate you asking. It was Ann Herbst, one of the best in the business. John C. says, I've noticed lately that Kyle Marshall and Chris Bianchi are dressing better. I apologize. I did not intend to do that. I'll try not to do that in the future. Pam, how many drinks can you order at last call if the 4 o'clock closing is in effect? I assume, Pam, that it doesn't change the last call rules, which generally is however many you can negotiate from your server. And this from Mike, is it true, is it me, or is tonight's jacket fitting a little loose on you? Mike, you're not wrong. It is a little loose. My weight's more unstable than my girlfriend in college, so just give it a couple of months and I will eat my way right back into this thing. Have faith in me. I do. See you next time.
Thanks for listening to the podcast version of Next. Catch us live weeknights at 6 Mountain Time on 9 News. Streaming live, same time, on 9 News Plus. Email me anytime at next@9news.com. Next producer is Mallory Harris. Our digital producer is Marilyn Moore. Our visual editor is Jeff Sartell. Our reporters include Marshall Zellinger, Mark Salinger, Angeline McCall, and Evan Kruel. Misty Montano is 9 News' digital director. I'm Kyle Clark. I'll see you next time.